Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain, and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.
You see where your business can go. To get there, you may need
another 10 trucks.
At Century Insurance, we put more than 115 years of industry experience to work to help protect you as you
launch a new delivery service
or
expand into a new region
and reach your business goals. Century. Right by you. Property and casualty coverages are underwritten and safety services are provided by a member of the Century Insurance Group, Stevens Point, Wisconsin. For a complete listing of companies, visit century.com. Policies, coverages, benefits, and discounts are not available in all states. See policy for complete coverage details.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
The economic mire into which the world has been thrown by the American administration. The markets closed last week down significantly. NASDAQ down, I think, about 5 or 6%. Dow down about the same. And if you take the week and you look at losses of major stocks, between 5 and 15% on the day and on the week for Amazon, for Apple, for Meta, and a whole load of others. A lot of the speculation is going to be now is, what happens on Monday when the markets open? Does this fall become even more precipitous? Or do we get a bounce back as people come to terms with what the tariffs will mean? Chris Johns will be with us in a second. He's former chief economist of the Bank of Ireland and formerly worked with the UK Treasury to give us his insight into those questions. But then last night we saw the first major push back in civil unrest terms against Donald Trump's administration as hundreds of protests were organized across the US. In fact, I should say thousands, 1,300 rallies organized by 150 distinct groups across 50 states, drawing hundreds of thousands of people to the streets. Paul Brandis is with us. He's West Wing Report's founder and White House bureau chief. Paul, how significant were the protests? We see photos of crowded streets, but depending on angles and the size of the city, you can read a lot into it. Did it matter?
Well, I think the symbolism of it is very important. And I think what people are finally understanding, I mean, look, this president has been in office for only about 2 months, and it's just been 2 months of one thing after another. And I think that people have, this was maybe the tipping point, the straw that broke the, you know, the proverbial camel's back. People are just fed up and just a shock with just the chaos, the rapid just attack on the Constitution, literally just doing things to undermine the economy. Trump says it's all good in the long run, but people just don't understand why he's doing all of this. And I think people are afraid. I think they're panicking that our way of life in so many respects is being challenged and undermined by this man. So they've had it. Now, whether the long-term impact of this, I don't know. I'm not quite sure. But the symbolism of it is very, very interesting. Just 50 states, as you say, a big protest. There's a big one here in Washington that I saw yesterday. So we'll see what happens. What's interesting also is that while all this was going on, what was President Trump doing? He was at a golf tournament in Florida. Talk about kind of a, you know, sending the wrong message. And the White House actually sent out a press release saying that he won his golf tournament in Florida yesterday. So kind of a dumb thing for them to do while all this is going on. Just kind of a Marie Antoinette, let them eat cake kind of a message.
That was an official White House press statement.
It was. They sent out a statement saying that the president was in a seniors golf tournament in Florida and that he won his round yesterday, and there'll be another tournament today that he hopes to do well. And they actually sent that out in the midst of all these. It's like they don't care. They just don't care. Just a very tone-deaf kind of thing for them to do. So it's just ridiculous that they would do that.
Now, so far, Paul, part of the reason previously that Trump and his administrations may not have cared is because all of the Republicans were forced to be in lockstep with whatever the president wanted, or he would remove them from his graces, and that meant electoral death. This time we see Ted Cruz raising concerns. We see Rand Paul raising concerns. We see significant conservative commentators like Ben Shapiro raising concerns. Is it significant that for the first time we're seeing those who should be, or who we would expect to be most loyal, rebelling?
Well, a lot of these folks said really nasty things about Trump in the past, Ted Cruz among them, Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, among them. They said back in a decade ago when Trump was first running for president that he was an idiot, that he would wreck the country, that he didn't know that he was doing. And then once Trump wins, of course, well, they change their tune and they start, the bootlicking and the sucking up to him and all of that. The hypocrisy is just unbelievable. So it's interesting now that some of them have finally found a little bit of spine to say that, look, these things are damaging. And what's behind all that, I think, is that some of these congressmen and senators are finally understanding that back home in their states and in their congressional districts, there are people who are actually being hurt by this. They're not just losing money in the stock market. They're losing their jobs. They're being, laid off by Elon Musk and this whole Doge stuff. You know, the federal government is not just here in Washington. Its impact is all over the country. So the end of federal spending and federal contracts and all that, it has a ripple effect all over the country. So these congressmen and senators are getting an earful from the people who voted for them, voted for Trump. So yes, I think this pushback that we're seeing, I think, is very symbolic. And I think it could grow depending on how bad things get over the next couple of weeks and months.
What's your analysis of the administration's capacity to sell the need for what they're doing? Because they're now effectively taking sort of a three-pronged approach. They're saying that this is a legacy of a problem left over from the previous Biden administration, that America has long been subjugated economically by the EU, China, and everybody else, and that it is short term, that there's going to have to be a difficult period of surgery. It'll sting for a bit, but then we will enter the sunny uplands. Will that work?
Well, they certainly hope it will. But I think when they say Trump on Air Force One, this is interesting, when he was flying down to Florida on Thursday, he's been playing golf for 3 days in a row now. Just ridiculous. He said to a reporter on the plane that, as you know, we inherited a bad economy. This was necessary. What do you mean, as you know, we inherited a bad economy? It's one of the biggest lies that he has told the American people. He did not inherit a bad economy. If you remember last fall, everyone from publications like The Economist and The Financial Times and The Wall Street Journal were all glowing about how good the American economy was. They said, and I'm quoting, it was the envy of the world. We had low unemployment, low gas prices, foreign investment was pouring into the country. Even on Joe Biden's watch, a supposedly, anti-fossil fuel guy, we were the number one oil and gas producer in the world. On and on and on. He did not inherit a bad economy. It was just classic Donald Trump disinformation, trying to deceive the American people about how bad things were. So, of course, he would say that. And that's why he says, we have to do this surgery on the patient. It was a very sick patient. He's making it. It wasn't sick in the fall. It's sick now. And it's all because of him. So they are really hoping that whatever he's trying to do is going to, have a short-term effect. And those sunny uplands, as you mentioned, we'll be seeing those shortly. I don't think so. I think we're in, depending on the length and severity of this trade war, I think we're in for a lot of pain.
Paul, as ever, thank you for your time. Paul Brandis, Westring, Westring Reports founder and White House Bureau chief. And we'll stay with the economics of it all, joined by former chief economist of the Bank of Ireland and ex-UK Treasury, Chris Johns. Chris, the market reaction to this, I think, I may be wrong on this, but I think it is the single biggest, fastest destruction of global wealth by any individual in the history of the free market. Now, it all may come good. The question is, how long and if at all? What's your take?
It won't come good, Anton. It's nonsense on stilts. Trump's aversion to global trade, and in particular imports of manufacturers into the United States, you can take a look on YouTube at things that he stuck up in the 1980s. He took out a four-page ad in the 1980s in the New York Times railing against imports of manufacturers. And he just has this weird thing about imports. He thinks they're bad. He thinks they make America poorer. And he blames them for a lot of the supposed ills of the US economy. And it's all simply wrong. There is no factual basis for it whatsoever. But he's done what he's done, and his intention is to bring manufacturing jobs back to the United States. What does that mean? It means that all those auto jobs, car workers, steel workers, coal miners, shipbuilders, he wants those industries to come back to the United States. They won't. They've gone forever. To the extent that he gets any new investment in the United States, it'll be minimal. And for example, if as a car manufacturer, say your Jaguar Land Rover, who yesterday here in the UK, they announced that they were suspending exports of Jaguars and Land Rovers to the United States for the time being while they try to assess the impact of these tariffs. Now that, of course, every Jaguar and Land Rover that's not exported to the United States is a subtraction from UK growth, and so therefore potentially a loss of jobs, a loss of tax revenues, a loss of profits for that company. Will somebody set up a plant in the United States to manufacture Jaguars and Land Rovers or indeed competitor products? If they do, and this is what Trump wants them to do, set up manufacturing plants in the United States, they'll just be staffed by robots. His diagnosis of the problem of loss of manufacturing jobs is incorrect. They haven't been offshored to the extent that he thinks they has. It hasn't been a one-for-one transfer of jobs to China and Korea and all those other places. These jobs have mostly been replaced by robots. It's technological change that has caused this problem in the United States more than offshoring of jobs. There is a particular problem with China, and we could talk all day about.
Well, sorry, just go back for a second on that, Chris, because I think when pressed on it, Republican surrogates and the administration to some extent point to things like what happened with the auto industry in the 1980s, where they say if you look at Reagan's not just tariffs, but actual ceiling on imports from Japan, that led to Honda and Toyota opening plants in the South and created a burgeoning auto industry in the southern states. Likewise, the tariffs that were put in place on Japanese motorcycle imports effectively saved Harley-Davidson and the American motorcycle industry as they recalibrated themselves financially and returned back to the market. So they can point to instances where this has worked. Why are you so sure it won't this time?
Well, yes, these companies, as I suggested, may well set up some manufacturing capabilities in the United States, but it will be far more limited than Trump would like. And to the extent that it's happened in the past, as I say, yes, some jobs are created, but nowhere near the number of jobs that were lost originally because the factories are robotic rather than staffed by, you know, these huge assembly lines with thousands and thousands of workers. My own kid brother worked, he recently retired, in a General Motors manufacturing plant in Canada, the country that Trump has a lot of animus for at the moment. And he started working on an assembly line over 30 years ago, where there were 16,000 people. Now, at the end of his career, they were producing more cars than when he started, but they were using 1,000 people. That's the technological change that I'm talking about. Yes, you will still have people servicing the robots, but not working on the assembly lines. Global trade just doesn't work like that anymore. And the bigger problem the United States has, and this is where it will get really sinister for Europe and the UK in particular, it's not manufactured goods that dominates world trade anymore. I mean, it used to back in the 50s, 60s and 70s. It's now services, financial services, consultancy, PR, insurance, all those industries are much, much bigger than manufacturers. And that there, if Trump starts having a go at that, then we are in real trouble. It's going to be bad enough for the global trading system. So yes, he will achieve something. I'm not saying that he will achieve absolutely nothing, but to the extent that he is going to resurrect or anywhere near all of these jobs, and in particular the social and political problems that came with the left behind communities, all of these car towns like Detroit, the mining areas of West Virginia, they're not going to make the comeback that Trump wants. It just isn't going to happen.
You said a particular problem with China.
Yeah. Now, China acceded to the World Trading Organization a good few years ago now, and the China shock, as we economists came to call it, has been a real problem for everybody, in particular the United States, because it's not just about economics. It's about, well, the new buzzword is geoeconomics, and China is trying to outmanufacture the United States for economic reasons, because it wants the jobs and the income, but also for military reasons. The brutal truth is, if China and America were to fight a war, a conventional war, America would lose because it couldn't manufacture the tanks, the planes, the guns that China is manufacturing and can manufacture. During the Second World War, America won that war for everybody because it was able to switch its manufacturing prowess from building stuff that people consumed to building what the military want. It doesn't have the manufacturing capability to do that anymore. And to the extent that he wants to build up that side of the American economy, I have a lot of sympathy for, because China is a real strategic threat. The China shock was too big, it was too quick, and their trading practices over many decades now have been extremely unfair. And so, yes, I think that they have had for a long time a real problem with China that they should have dealt with earlier. But that's not the problem they've got with the EU. That's not the problem they got with Ireland. That's not the problem they got with the UK. America's not going to fight a war with those countries. The military strategic imperative of China is completely different and doesn't justify a global trade war. A trade war with China, I kind of sort of understand, but not with anybody else.
Now, what about your analysis of the various spectrums of response? Because on the one end of the spectrum, we have Mark Carney and Canada elbows up, reciprocal tariffs, ending of a 250-year relationship. China pretty close with almost immediate tariffs in response. On the other end, you have Vietnam rolling over saying they will take the tariff rates to zero just so that they can continue to manufacture Nikes. Which works and where should the EU be?
If you don't stand up to a bully, they're just going to keep coming at you. So I'm with Canada on this one. I'm with Mark Carney and I'm not with Keir Starmer. Keir Starmer hasn't rolled over in the way that Vietnam has, but he's trying to play both ends against the middle. And I think he's going to fall, to mix the metaphor, he's going to fall between two stools there. Because Trump will just keep coming for you unless you stand up to him. He's the classic schoolyard bully. And already he's been a little bit more emollient when it comes to Mark Carney, thanks to Mark Carney's elbows up response. Ken Clark was an ex-chancellor of the Exchequer here in the UK many years ago. Used to talk about the Europhobes, the people that hated Europe in the Tory party, long before we thought of Brexit. It's been a problem here in the UK, this particular wing of the Tory party. And he said, they're like, if you imagine yourself in a canoe, and he was describing the problem that UK prime ministers have had with these Europhobes for many years. He said, you're paddling along a river in a canoe and these crocodiles keep coming for you and you keep throwing them red meat. He said, eventually you're going to run out of red meat and then they're going to come and eat you. And this is what happened here in the UK with Brexit. And what Trump is doing with the UK, with the US, is really a globalized version of Brexit. He's withdrawing the US from the global trading system. And he's not going to stop until somebody stands up to him. And I'm afraid that if you pursue a Keir Starmer style approach of trying to appease him, you're going to get eaten.
Chris, thank you as ever. Chris Johns, former Chief Economist of the Bank of Ireland and formerly of the UK Treasury as well. Chris also is co-host with Jim Power of the Other Hand podcast that looks in depth at matters like this. So if you want to hear more from Chris, the Other Hand podcast.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.